Is that what Yankees baseball is supposed to look like? We pummel the Rays 12-5. Jake, I know this was a breath of fresh air. I don't think anyone thought this was coming, right? Marcus Stroman, he did what he had to do. He qualified for a win. I'm pretty sure he did get the win. 5 full innings of work, 3 hits. 1 earned run. He did give up a home run in his final inning. No one really cared about that. It was a good day for him. I know a lot of us were saying we wish that he gave up 30. We scored 31, still found a way to win. We're never going to root for this team to lose. And yet, if we told you that this was going to be how Marcus Stroman would pitch, maybe some of those people who are in our comments saying that his value maybe could tick up a bit, and then you can sell, not high, but you can sell at all, right, on Marcus Stroman. So it was a good day for him. It was a good day for the Yankees. 2, again, back to Stroman, 2 walks, 1 K. And we'll discuss what all this means, like what we're going to do with him in the coming weeks. Obviously, the deadline's in about 30 days, so there's a lot. Jazz Chisholm, Jake's favorite player, 2-for-4 day, 4 ribbies, home run, the triple. I mean, he did it all. He also had a check swing where you saw an injury scare. We've talked about this injury risk and whether or not you're going to want to bring back this player for the long term, bring him back for the next 5-6 years, maybe even a decade. We'll discuss all this money, how much it'll be, length of contract, all of it. Aaron Judge, 2 homers, number 29, number 30. I'm used to this being a special event that you just never see, but obviously what's going on with Cal Raleigh, I'm used to like Josh Hamilton does it, and it's something special going into the break, but this is just what Aaron Judge does. And then my favorite player on the roster, and I love talking about him, Mr. Cody Bellinger, 3-for-5, the double, his 11th home run. Yankees hitters walked 8 times today, struck out 9 times. Aaron Boone said just yesterday, this offense is not working starters. They're not making anyone work to create outs. They're essentially just an easy out. I think he was right, and it's good to see them actually today doing something about it. Brubaker was shelled. He recorded 1 out, Jake. He surrendered 4 earned runs. The good news here, Johnny Lowe returned to the mound from his illness. He looked good. Tim Hill, Ian Hamilton pitched. He didn't start any unnecessary fights with no one for no good reason. That was good. And Luke Weaver pitched a clean inning, which was great to finish things up. But let's start, Jake, with Jazz Chisholm, because earlier today, after his home run, you text me and you said, simply put, Jazz is a star. And obviously I wasn't willing to give up that type of description for this player just yet. But then you created some context, right? You wanted to create some distance between what a star is and what a superstar is. And you wanted to mention the fact that there's clearly a difference between Jazz and an Ohtani or a Bobby Witt Jr., Freddie Freeman, Aaron Judge. But it seems like Jazz is somewhere between good player and an all-time great. A really good day for him. And for those just joining us, please make sure you guys subscribe and like this video. Any super chats will be read on the channel. So Jazz was awesome. He was great today. He was an all-around baseball player. You love to watch it. Jake, how are we feeling on Jazz?
We're feeling good. Obviously, now that he dodged a bullet or whatever the hell that was, because I don't know about you. First name that came to mind when I saw that was Andrew Benintendi and the Hammett bone. And I was like, yeah. Oh, my God. If this just happened again, I am going to go ballistic. But no, that's not what happened. I think Jazz, I think it was honestly like a stinger, you know, like he probably just, I've done that before. Maybe it had something to do with like his forearm or something. Hard to tell. He kept the hand on the bat a little bit too, you know, too long all the way through the follow through. So, you know, a little scary, but you look at this player and yeah, he's a star. And what I mean by that is I think a superstar slash elite. We can call them elite. We can call them superstars, but they're different than a star. To me, a star, just a straight up star, is somebody that if the Yankees are playing on ESPN or Apple TV, he can be that featured player on that promotional image. That's a star, a guy that you can market, right? A guy that people actually get excited about purchasing the jersey, going to the ballpark to watch. That's a star. Like Stanton, he's still a star to a degree, right? He is. People still go to the ballpark to see that dude hit 117 off the bat. He is.
He's certainly a star in October.
In October, especially, yeah. Yes. But, like, for instance, is Anthony Volpe a star? No. Austin Wells? No. LeMahieu? He was. He's not anymore, right? Really, on the Yankees, Cody Bellinger is a perfect definition of what a star is. He is a star. He's not a superstar. He's not the reason you go to the ballpark, but he's one of the reasons when you're like, yeah, you know, I can't wait to go and see my Yankees play. Got Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, Jazz Chisholm. When you're naming off those players, those are stars. You're going to the ballpark to see Max Fried. You might go to the ballpark and see Carlos Rodon nowadays because he's a star right now. He is. And that, to me, is the definition. I feel like superstar is when you're just upper echelon, elite level, better than everyone else.
Yeah, that's about a bidding war. You're a free agent. Yeah. It's when's he a free agent, and the contract's going to start with a three. But part of the part
Juan
of the contract,
Soto is the superstar. There you go. Like, there he you made all that money. Aaron Judge.
You walk around the concourse and you see either Derek Jeter's jersey number two, or you see this player. That's a superstar. And we all understand the difference. I hope people understand.
If SportsCenter, because you know how they try to cover baseball and they give you like two highlights and they're like, all right, that was the entire game.
I've actually never seen a trace of baseball on the highlights. Never.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't watch SportsCenter anymore, but what I remember, of course, this was way after Stuart Scott, because he actually used to give it, you know, some breathing there. Like, they used to actually go over stuff. But way after Stuart Scott, the last thing I remember on SportsCenter is that, say it'd be like the Dodgers, right? Mm-hmm. Dodgers win. Betts goes yard. What's his face? I forget. He was on the team. He's gone now. But like Will Smith would go yard. Like, everybody goes yard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Dodgers win. Ohtani went 0-2 with two walks.
Yeah, it seems like they only want to talk about the superstars when it comes to baseball. They don't talk about maybe that tier down, right?
Like, Albies was a... I don't know if you could say he still is. I would say, right? I mean, Ozzie Albies, is he a star?
No. No, okay, he's fallen off a cliff. But I see what your point is. You're talking about whatever the core is to said quality team. Like, a good team that's a pencil-in postseason team. There's, like, a list of 3 to 4 players on each contender where you're like, he's not a superstar, but he's a very, very good player, right? Austin Riley, one of those players. He's
great example.
Certainly not a superstar. He's not a household name, but he's putting up great numbers essentially every year. And now you're going to look up. I think Jazz can be in that, where every year you look up and Jazz can turn it on and have a certain stat line where you say he's just a very good player. And that's what Jazz is. He's a very good player. The last thing for him to check off is health. You saw it today with the check swing. That's my worry with this player. I've said it about 10 times. I'll say it again. Jazz has to figure out a way how to keep himself out of harm's way. Obviously, the 70% swing is working. When they talk about doing too much, giving that 100% swing, we talked about that about a week ago, that when he gives that 100% swing and he's trying to marry the power game, he's not a very good player. There's too much swing and miss in that game. The legs are no longer a part of the equation. And by the time you look up, you feel like you're looking at a 200 hitter who at any time can hit a home run. There's that threat. Still fine, but by no stretch is that a star. Today's version of Jazz and the way that he's going about his business is star potential if he can stay on the field. Jazz postgame, he said, I feel like me. I feel like I'm back in my era when I was younger, going out there and just hitting. So I feel like what he's talking about here, Jake, is the difference between thinking versus reacting and being an athlete, having more fun. He's getting more involved in each game. He gets on first base. His mind immediately goes to the situation. How many outs are there? Can I steal second base? Can I get in scoring position for the guys behind me? It's a better brand of baseball, and it's much more, let's be honest, it's much more helpful for the Yankees to win. So Jazz, if he can stay healthy, it's not even a matter of if you want him back, it's how much is that going to cost, and that's where it gets tricky.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I'm more worried, of course, about the, you know, how much you're getting paid each year. You know, we were kind of joking about this. Jazz could get a $400 million contract, but if they give him a 40-year deal, it's not going to be that much, right? So You know, I mean, I'm not saying they would, but I, you know, so yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's kind of the thing. I mean, you'd probably look at, cause what Jazz is doing, in my opinion, is replacing what Gleyber Torres was supposed to be on this roster long-term. I think when they got Gleyber from the Cubs and then they watched him develop and he had 39 home runs the year that everybody says the ball was juiced, that at that point the Yankees had likely started to put plans in place to extend Gleyber long term and make him a franchise player for the right. team. And I feel like now, since Gleyber's gone, that spot is still open, and I can tell you right now it's not going to be Anthony Volpe. It's just not. So that spot is wide open, and Jazz Chisholm, you know, the rent is going to come due, and the question is, are you renting or are you buying? And if you're buying, then I think we, you know, we'll see an extension maybe this off season instead of, you know, going to arbitration, they just get a deal done. But if you're renting, then it'll be arbitration and then we'll see what ends up happening after that. But
his arbitration number should be thick. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Jazz's power
numbers.
It's going to
be more than Torres, I think.
Yeah. It's going to swell because of the power numbers, because of the stolen base numbers. Some of these numbers, while they're always good, we'll root for all the numbers to pile up because it's in our benefit in 2025. But I promise you guys, when his agency and they all meet up and say, all right, well, what's the deal with this player in Jazz? They're going to bring up health. I promise you. Arbitration is an ugly process. It's never good. This is part of the reason why organizations want to sign guys. It's not just saving money on the back end. It's also not having to strain the relationship with a player. Because in arbitration, remember, you are literally negotiating against a player. You are telling them everything bad about themselves. They don't want to hear that. And you saw with Pedro Martinez and that relationship in Boston strained because of negotiations. You don't want to see that. So it's interesting. Yuri says, great win, fellas. We should handle business versus Toronto. I would love that. And by the way, I see in the comment section, Ray C., you are now, and we did start to roll out the process. We're going to roll out mods. So for those of you who are here often, frequently commenting, whether it be supers or not, just being involved here every day, we do want to reward people for doing so and being a part of this channel. And obviously becoming a mod gives you more control over watching the comment section to make sure everything runs smoothly. Because without that, I mean, I already know in like 2 years, our comments are going to be a damn show. It's hard to deal with. Because, I mean, if you look at it, when we first started this podcast, within the first month, it was like the chat would move once in the span of 30 minutes. And just yesterday, you get 8,500 views and the comment section moves quite a bit. So we do need people to help us with that process. We would greatly appreciate you guys doing that. So again, Yuri, thank you for supporting the channel. Kid
also
Reyes, as always.
And Kid Reyes. So
that's right. So Kid Reyes with the super, it's always been great to this podcast. Thank you for the two and supporting. Says Judge needed this. He's has been a whiff a lot. So I want to talk about Judge first, and then we'll dive into Marcus Stroman, because Marcus Stroman has to be discussed today. He just has to be, especially with what happened. And Aaron Judge has been bad, right? Since that benching in Kansas City. Now, we won that game. It was a success, technically. We shouldn't be complaining about that result. But the Aaron Judge you saw in Boston, outside of that clutch homer, which we did receive, we did talk about it, we did cover it, he has not been the same Aaron Judge. Now, Aaron Judge is a cartoon character. It's a fake numbers almost. He's a 400 hitter with pop who has incredible plate discipline and finds a way. Yeah, strikeouts are still part of his game, but he finds a way every year to minimize that, right? To minimize that area of his game, and he improves it. But while he's struggling, he can strike out with the best of them. He's not really taking quality at bats, and today was a step in the right direction. People have been covering it on the outside saying the Yankees don't go unless he goes. Well, seeing him hit number 29 and number 30 should be a major sign for the Yankees to come. So I'm excited about that, Jake.
Yeah, no, I think today, even though it was just the A's and you're beating up on, I think today can be really beneficial for guys like Aaron Judge. You hit two home runs today, you can get back on the horse. I think it's kind of like, you know, I forget who said it, but it's this idea, like when you're playing football and you're the quarterback, sometimes getting a hit or two kind of gets you in the game type deal. I think Judge just really needed to actually, you know, start seeing the ball get over the wall again. And I think we're going to start to see him turn this thing around. You get into slumps, that is baseball. Okay, don't let them tell you that every single June the Yankees being bad is just baseball. But having a slump is baseball. Judge happened to have this earlier in the year last year and then blew by it and never had a bad slump again until October, right? So really, if this is it, I mean, Judge, I mean, the sky's really the limit with him. It's going to be hard for him to get back to close to 400, right?
That stung That stung for you to say that he didn't slump till October.
I know it did. I tried to get by it. You mentioned it more. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, it did sting. But no, I think getting past, you know, this point, I think this is the end of it. I do. And he was hitting. He had lower than I forget the actual, like, you know, the run, but I don't know if you saw that stat today. As of late, Judge had a lower than 600 OPS. I don't think I've ever seen Judge attached to that number ever.
It was really bad.
He didn't have that last year when he was doing poorly because he was hitting the ball out of the yard. He just wasn't doing anything else.
Yeah, it was like he was Adam Dunn for 3 weeks, and there wasn't really a reason for us to freak out because we knew he was going to fix it. He was going to come out of it, and plus, the Yankees were still finding ways outside of him to win. So people can say what they want that the Yankees don't go unless he goes. Well, we went last year while he wasn't playing his best baseball. So I wanted to bring that up. In post-game, Aaron Judge was talking actually about the panic button, right? And about what's going on. Aaron Judge post-game said, we don't really push the panic button in here. Maybe people do on the outside, but that's their job. And we just got to show up ready to do our thing. So he clearly is he clearly is talking about podcasters and the media in general. And I will tell you this. The conclusion of that is we just have to do our thing. You weren't doing your thing. That's why it was covered the way it was covered. People don't want the Yankees to lose. I know as much as he probably thinks they do, and he probably makes the assumption, and he'd be accurate, at least in the short term. The Yankees losing does help everyone's ratings. It does. If the Yankees had barely won today, our ratings probably would have been better today if we had lost. But Jake, I'm going to tell you one thing. Long term, the best thing for everyone in the New York market, in the media, is for the Yankees to be on top of the world again. For the Yankees to be a part of the World Series and to best the Los Angeles Dodgers, to beat a Philadelphia team, to beat a San Diego team, absolutely, is the best possible thing that can happen for any of us. So I just don't understand the us versus them mentality in the media. I don't get it. And I do understand. And I'm trying to give him, you know, extended olive branch here and understand. He's really saying this is a tight-knit group. We're not going to freak out. We have a process that we have to stick to. But at the same time, we're still rooting for you. Let's be clear.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, I mean, you know, Judge has always been respectful to the media, including like people like us. Like, I don't think he's throwing us under the bus or anything. I actually like that comment. It's like, that's their job. Because I feel like people forget, like, Gary and I are doing a job right now. This is our job.
Technically,
we do
true.
This every single day after every single game. And consistency is everything. If we weren't consistent, I mean, hell, we saw it, Gary. We took 2 months off after the Bregman stuff. And then it was like, people are like, are you done? It's like, no.
People were messaging us left and right. So yeah. I guess the Yankee show's over. We're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that people wanted the Yankee show in February. But we're going to do that this offseason. We'll find a way. We'll ask. Of course, we're going to ask our audience, what type of content do you want? Do you want us to discuss free agents? Do you want us to discuss prospects, right? Upcoming spring training, players' roles, who gets called up, who doesn't. We'll discuss all that. But James with the 10, the super. James, thank you for supporting this channel. Greatly appreciated. Says, what a win. Judge was Judge. Stroh was good. I love that we're like, Stroh was good. And Jazz was great. The best part of the game actually was Belly fist bumping that young fan after the 3-run home run. That was pretty cool.
That's really what made
today special. So it got the fans involved. You don't ever really see that, where there's an interaction in a good way between a fan and a player. And Cody Bellinger, by the way, obviously I know him personally. if you know him, this is the type of person he is. He's just very involved. And of course, his dad having played with the team, he understands the relationship between the fan, the Yankees fan, and the Yankees player, and how much we care about this team. So that was cool to see. You got to love that. Hopefully that fan got a picture of that, because that would be sweet.
Yeah, no, I thought that was awesome. That was really cool to see, and it wasn't surprising. That is who he is, and you know, you've made that clear. I don't know him personally, but he always seemed like a cool dude, even when he was on the Dodgers. You know, he was hard to, because I told you I had a bone to pick with the Dodgers after they got rid of Mattingly, and it's hard to root against players like that. I'll say that for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, he got hurt. Cody Bellinger got hurt. He hurt his shoulder, actually, essentially fist bumping Justin Turner. I believe it was Justin Turner. If not, I'm mistaking, obviously, the player. But that's actually what threw his Dodgers career essentially for a loop. And the Dodgers had to make a decision. Do we back this player and wait out this resurgence for him to get back to form? Will he ever get back to form? And long story short, they made the decision to go young and also bring in players, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman. They went a different direction and signed a different core. Cody Bellinger ends up in Chicago, never gets that big-time contract that everyone was talking about, right? MVPs usually get contracts that start in the 200s, 300, hell, even up to 700 million. He didn't get that because of exit velocity. People were concerned about the strength, the bat speed. But there's also teams, I know that people say that the Yankees are married to analytics. If the Yankees were that deep in analytics, I don't think they bring in this type of player. Cody Bellinger's the type of guy where, yeah, he may hit the ball 75 off the bat, but he's going to try and find a hole. And you look up and the numbers are starting to indicate that. Cody Bellinger, as I described it, is the second most impactful player on this roster. Between the glove, between the arm, between the reads that he makes, between the adjustments at the batter's box, I just think overall he's a baseball player. He's what you want. When you show up to a postseason series and you have no idea how you're going to win a game, Cody Bellinger is one of those guys to help you figure out some random way.
I agree. It's actually really nice to see him get to 270 on the year, by the way.
Agree. I did notice that.
That was cool. Because do you know who Cody Bellinger really is replacing?
Who's that?
He's replacing the hope that they had for Alex Verdugo. Because Alex Verdugo had actually good numbers in the past. He wasn't just like some jobber. Like, he actually brought something to the yard offensively. And when he first started with the Yankees, like his first 2 months, I was saying, wow, this guy keeps it up. I want him back. Well, guess what? Bellinger has more pop. And he's got what we see, you know, early on with Verdugo. So having him at 270 going into July, that is a very good sign. I think that thing can creep up. I really do. I think he can continue this. And I think he's going to end up with more home runs than people think. He's got 11 right now. I think he has had a hard time staying in a rhythm. So, Earth to Boone, keep him in the damn lineup.
I was going to say, I wonder why.
For the love of all that is holy, keep him in the lineup.
He had three hits today.
Yeah.
Double, a home run, played great defense in the outfield. And you'd love to believe tomorrow, Monday, we're going to see Cody Bellinger's name in that lineup. You'd like to believe that, but we don't have there's no sure thing. So yeah. I want to see that. Let's build off of this some positive momentum. I shouldn't even say some positive momentum. Today was a great day for Cody Bellinger. Any person, whether you played Little League, Pony League, Babe Ruth, professional baseball, all the way up to the big leagues, when you go 3 for 5 and a ball gets out to the seats, you can't wait to get dressed the next day. You can't wait to play. Please don't put this man in a pullover. Let him play, Aaron Boone. Do not tell me that you've got other guys you got to keep ready. This guy's too good to sit. He is. And I want to get to this super chat because it's really good with Aaron Judge. You actually were somewhat talking about it earlier.
I was pretty hyped about it.
Yeah, so D's channel with the 5. Thank you, D's. We really appreciate you supporting our channel as always. Says Judge, 44 career multi-home run games, passes Lou Gehrig for 3rd in Yankees history. He's unbelievable. He is. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's the best player on the team, of course. He's the best player in baseball when he's right. But I want to move this conversation to Marcus Stroman, because when we were teeing up this game, I don't think anyone was willing to put their money that the Yankees were going to win this series and take this rubber match, right? Obviously with the A's, we were worried about what Stroman would do.
My dad had no idea this was going to happen.
He said, all right, who predicted Stroman pitching well after getting shelled in Double A? Crazy game. Anything can happen with a veteran player. This is clearly what the Yankees are relying on. It just is. It's kind of the same deal as Giancarlo Stanton going to the minors. And whether he was hitting well, which he did, or not, you just rely on that it is this certain player. He's been around the block. He'll just figure it out on the fly. And then also one extra thing I wanted to bring up before I kick it over to you. We're playing the A's. So this isn't a little league team, but they're not one of the better teams in baseball. A lot of young hitters. You saw hitters today. The zone was tight. And I actually said before this start, if the zone is tight, he's going to be in trouble. And yet, these A's hitters did not make adjustments. They're chasing breaking balls, sweepers, sliders off the plate, not seeing strikes at all, not making Marcus Stroman come to them. They were essentially doing exactly what you would do to keep Stroman in the game. And Stroman did his job. You hit decent spots. You make aggressive hitters just get themselves out. And before you know it, you're qualified for a win, and you get that win. Yeah.
Who would have thought? Not me. Not me. But I thought that, you know, kind of looking at it today, I think that slurve is his best pitch by far. I thought he definitely got the most out of that. They could not hit that. He located that well. His fastball is a meatball. Like when he throws that, I texted you immediately. I was like, why are you challenging a guy middle with that? He doesn't really have anything to go with that fastball. So, hey, I'm glad. I am. I'm not saying, you know, I want Stroman to be fantastic and take a spot up and get to the point where Yarbrough comes back and like, yeah, sorry, Yarbrough. We know that you have way better stuff. You were really, really good. But we're going to go with Marcus Stroman. I'm not hoping for that. But you know what I am hoping for? Personal. I'm hoping that for there a contender out there that needs a arm and they need a bat, you could package Stroman and Grisham and get something.
It would be great. And of course, when we talk about rooting for Marcus Stroman not to pitch well, but the Yankees still to win, we're essentially just teeing it up for the fact that we believe the Yankees should be better with this roster spot. We think the Yankees can do better. They can upgrade. And you can't do that if Marcus Stroman gives you what he did last year in the first half. Now, this knee injury obviously is a bad thing. We don't want to see him hurt. But one thing it does that is positive is that there's not really any wear and tear. Remember last year I brought up 130 innings. That was going to be a problem. Yeah. What is Marcus Stroman going to look like past that 130 mark? And he wasn't good. I mentioned the fact that there could be a cliff to be fallen off of, and that's exactly what we saw. And Jake, unfortunately, we went to Yankee Stadium and saw post-130 inning Marcus Stroman. It was not what you want to see, but again, the positive side here of that knee injury is that there's not that wear and tear that he would have normally at this point in the season. So maybe Marcus Stroman over this next few weeks is going to give us first half 2024 Stro. And that is still a credible and solid pitcher in the game. Now, this is why we were rooting against it, is that if he pitches well over the next month and he's not traded at the deadline, certainly possible, wildly possible actually, you may see him on the mound in August. On the mound in September. Do I want him on the mound in September as a starter? Probably not, because you're going to be facing contenders and it's going to be tight in the standings, clearly. So yeah, that's what we're worried about. It's nothing personal to Marcus Stroman. If I hated him, I'd just shoot him a text, tell him I hate him, but I don't. So I hope people understand that. I hope people get it.
I like the way you said that. Yeah, no, I definitely feel that. You texted me earlier today. Spencer Jones just went yard again.
I know you're excited about this. I didn't even text you that this would be a topic at all. Like, we didn't brainstorm this. I'm glad you brought it up. What do you think's happening here? Because right now, we've got a player. This is what we were hoping for. You've got a player. The hype is dead. It is. It's no longer making projections of who he'll be and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But we're now getting numbers to back up hype, per se. He's now in AAA. He already got through the gauntlet of AA, which everyone perceives, at least scouts, that the best pitching and the best arms are in AA. Mm-hmm. And he was raking. His ops was actually hovering closer to 1,000 than anything else. He gets called up to AAA. A lot of people said that wouldn't happen to the deadline. I even said that. Ended up being wrong. He gets called up right away. Now you've got Cody Bellinger in the outfield. You've got Trent Grisham. You've got Aaron Judge. You've got Jason Dominguez. What do we do with this player in Spencer Jones? Is he just kicking up his value for a major splash for the Yankees? Or just maybe, is he going to potentially earn himself a job in the Bronx? It's certainly possible, but then you have to start wondering down the road, who loses their job to make this happen?
All right. So, not saying that I want this to happen, but I'm also trying to be realistic here.
Yes.
LeMahieu, Stanton,
okay.
Chisholm, even Bellinger to a degree, have had injury concerns, right?
Correct.
Okay. Do we think all of them are going to be healthy come September?
No, I would probably say if I had to wager,
mm-hmm.
it is relatively realistic for Stanton to go down with some type of injury, mm-hmm. or more likely DJ LeMahieu, who over the course of the last 5 years has struggled to stay on the field. So that's not us putting a pin in somebody.
No,
just what's happened in the past. Does that impact what's going to happen in 2025? Perhaps. But then what happens if you bring up a Spencer Jones and then a DJ LeMahieu is hurt and then gets healthy suddenly? Do you trust the Yankees to leave said player, said veteran, off the roster and allow Spencer Jones to play? That's the problem. Because you can't just say, well, someone's going to get hurt and solve this problem for me. That may be short-term what happens, but what happens when you start creeping into September and October? Are the Yankees going to allow a player like Spencer Jones to take on any type of role?
I think this is an easy solve. You ready for this? This is easy. The easiest thing ever. Trade Trent Grisham at the deadline, because I just saw that list, the top 10 list. You know who's number one? Alcantara.
Who's number one? Alcantara. Number one on what?
On the MLB trade deadline list.
Who makes these lists?
I don't know. It was MLB.com. I was like, what?
And is then, there not an author to it?
Oh, and then I forget to tell you, what's his face? The dude who... Robert, who they're trying to sell. He'll be better on your team. Yeah,
I'm telling you guys. I'm telling you guys. Some of these writers, are in bed with these owners. It's just you cannot possibly tell me.
I told you the Marlins are the team of marketing.
Hit below 200 for multiple years in a row, and I'm not telling you guys that it can't work with somebody else. But to put him at the top of a list as a reclamation project that some other contender will fix, that's a tall order to bring a player who's underperformed multiple years in a row, who's also dealt with injuries, but he's just going to be fine with you guys. Mind you, we're open to this concept. We did this with Jazz. Jazz was playing really some of the most mediocre baseball you've ever seen in Miami. He was just really engulfed and in love with his bad habits. That 100% swing, who was in Miami to tell him that we needed 70%? Who was going to tell him that? Nobody.
Oh, no.
We'll do that.
Miami doesn't develop anybody.
Miami doesn't care because they're Miami. Okay. Well, you guys do that. The Yankees said, we think we can fix this. Why did we say that? Because it's not like he's at the ocean's floor. He's still giving positive production. We just think we can get really good.
Yeah.
Possibly to even call it a star for a couple seconds. So... I don't get those lists. I don't understand who crafts them. It's sad. You can't go to MLB.com and trust what the hell we're reading. This is why kids my age don't read anymore, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know who wrote it, to be fair. It was one of the graphics on their Twitter account. And I'm like, Alcantara, I just saw a bunch of mid. That's what I saw. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you not take advantage of how piss poor this market is with Grisham? I don't get that. Because here's the thing. Very easy fix. You ready for this? You know what the trade deadline is? At the end of July, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trade Trent Grisham. Get whatever you get in return. Call up Pereira, Everson Pereira. He is not chomping at the bit where you have to play him every day. right? He's not Jason Dominguez. He's not Spencer Jones. You call him up to be a depth piece. He can play every now and then, but it allows you to now go all in on Jason Dominguez, keep Bellinger on the field, keep Judge on the field, right? And DH is not clogged because now it's between what? Stanton and Rice.
Your
and
occasionally bench players, Judge. You want your bench players to be good enough to be able to give you a high baseline of play, but it can't be a good enough player where their usual role is a starter. Right now, the Yankees have four players, three of which should absolutely be starters. One player in Trent Grisham, he's been both. He's been a bench player. He's also been a starter. Yeah. And yet, the Yankees treat him like a player who's just used to starting, and they cannot possibly use him as this designated bench guy. It almost feels like the Yankees need to get rid of that problem because they can't deal with it correctly. It's so weird. I don't know what to tell people because people get upset, right? They do get really upset when you say to trade a player like Trent Grisham because, Jake, when you just said it, there's going to be people who say, well, why am I hearing that? Hey, I'm getting good production. So why would I want this player off my roster? The only reason is because the Yankees have no ability to make the clear choice that Jason Dominguez has to be able to play every day in order to develop.
So my thing here, and this is why this is an extended, I've really thought this out, and I just feel like it's easy, right? You trade a guy who is still 28. He's likely a rental, but a team could, you know, you get him in the organization, you sell it on him, and then all of a sudden he signs with you because the Yankees aren't bringing him back. I don't believe so. So you trade Trent Grisham, who's on a one-year deal, who you got to throw in for Juan Soto to play the 22-year-old every day. But he's not just a throwaway, okay? This is the beauty about trading Trent Grisham. He all of a sudden becomes one of the best. I'm not even just saying bats. He's one of the best players on the market. When you look at the guys that they're trying to...
Does it remind you of the Bader deal with Montgomery?
To a degree, yeah. I think they could get something good for him. I do. I think they could get like a really good, either a nice little package to help their farm system. Maybe get some guys that are in AAA, right? Instead of the double A or the single A guys that we won't see for another 3 years. But maybe fix their timeline a little bit because they did move a lot of AAA guys. One. Two, they could also go out and get like a really good relief pitcher, right? They could go out and they could get another position player. Maybe you're reallocating that position. And instead, now when you move him, you're moving him for a shortstop. You're moving him for a second baseman. You're moving, you know what I mean? So there's something you could do there. And I just think that's the best way to do it because then you bring in Pereira, who, by the way, doesn't cost you anything. So, and by the way, when you trade Grisham, you free up a 40-man roster spot. I'll get to that in a sec. Everson Pereira is already on the 40-man roster. That means they don't have to put him on there. They don't have to make a corresponding move. It's why Boone said if he wasn't on the paternity leave at the same time as Ascara, he would have been called up to replace Ascara on the roster. So Pereira can get called up. He's been in the big leagues before. He didn't have a ton of success. He's fallen off tremendously in terms of their top-notch prospects. He used to be in the top five, and now he's in the teens. So you don't have that force where you have to play him every day and you don't have to play him over Jason Dominguez. He is exactly what you want because he's an athletic player. He's got a bat, you know, he can play the field and he can play all three of those outfield positions. So he's on your bench, right?
Yeah. Make bench players, bench players again.
Yeah. So August is taken care of, right? All of August is Pereira. Mm-hmm. So then September, you have September call-ups. And all of a sudden, that spot, obviously, you can replace Trent. You could just do it right away. So you replace Trent Grisham on the 40-man roster with Spencer Jones. He doesn't have to be on the 26-man roster to go on the 40-man, but now he's on the 40-man, so you can call him up when you have those September call-ups. And that is what that is. So you call him up in September, and he gets to play in September, and guess what? Their season is just about over. So it's not like he's missing out on reps. He's just on the Yankees, and he's getting at-bats he otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah, because we don't want him at the big league level. And then all of a sudden you tell me that, well, we've got our three guys, so yeah, just be ready.
This is what they did with like Jeter and those guys when they were young. Yes. That's what they do.
You call them up at a point in the season where it's reasonable for them not to be accepting at-bats. That makes a lot of sense. Something that the Yankees, and for example, if they called up, say, a Spencer Jones 3 weeks from now, right, and you're talking about around the deadline, they don't really, let's just say they get rid of, let's say they keep Grisham, right, which is probably the more likely thing to happen. And then all of a sudden they decide, well, Spencer Jones is playing too good at baseball. He deserves a call-up. Now they call him up. Well, now you have five outfielders. So what do you, where are you finding these at-bats? And then rightfully they would tell us, well, Spencer Jones isn't worth playing right now. And that would make a lot of sense because you can argue that Trent Grisham's probably going to take a better at-bat right now in his career. You can say Jason Dominguez, right? Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge, obviously. So it makes it difficult because now you're just putting a guy on ice just to call him a Yankee. And that probably doesn't make sense. You're spending service time. You're wasting reps. But I love this idea. I think it is proactive. It at least is a plan. And certainly, I want to give the Yankees credit here. We don't know if this is not their plan. It very well could be. Slim Lewis with the super. Slim, thank you for the five supporting our channel. As always, says no. And I love this. I love that there's definitely a... This is actually the camp that I'm in. I don't agree with everything Slim says here, but I understand and I track it. So Slim says, no, don't extend Jazz. He's streaky, injury-prone, generally awful in situational hitting, and really only average defensively. Good player, not great. So I'm going to address the good player, not great. He's average defensively. Jazz is probably average or slightly above average defensively at third base, but let's keep in mind one thing here. Jazz is out of position, right? Jazz came to this organization, and because Gleyber Torres decided, I don't want to move, right? Michael Kay said, well, listen to what Jazz is saying. Jazz is telling you, I'm great at second base. Not just my opinion, the analytics say it. I'm awesome over there. But you guys, based on your roster and what DJ LeMahieu's doing, what some other injuries to guys like Cabrera, I'll play third base. I'll go wherever you want me to. So now that he's open to going out of position for this organization, something we clapped for, he goes over to his new position. And he's playing average, not great defense at third, and now suddenly we're upset at it. Slim, if you bring back this player, in my opinion, you're bringing him back to play his home second base position. That's what I'm looking at. And as far as the situational hitting, like, I don't have any problem with any of those takes, but here's the kicker. Injuries. Being injury prone. What does that mean? Do you have the ability to be available? And so far in Jazz's career, he's shown a unique ability, and not in a good way, to find himself in the wrong spot. Unfortunate injuries, soft tissue injuries. We've seen that earlier this year. Jazz has to check this box. He has to figure out, how do I stay available for the Yankees in the short term and in the long term? If I can do that, I'm a big time player. I'm an expensive asset. And I hope he does it because I want him to win in all this. And if he wins, we win. So Slim, I have no problem with this take. I really don't. I probably wouldn't go to this extent. Jake, I feel like you would agree with this. But he's got to prove this aspect of his game is great to be a long stay.
Yeah, no, I think Slim, appreciate the five. I think what he's saying is fair. I guess I'm going about it a little bit differently with the he's streaky. I believe that he made a drastic change in his approach, the 70%. And I understand that could just be a marketing thing, right? Like, Yes Network's talking about it, gets people excited. Ooh. And then all of a sudden he starts struggling and they're like, yeah, he stopped actually going 70%. You know what I mean?
You can just say it, right? If he's striking out, you can say he's swinging hard.
Exactly. But yeah, I see it. I do. I see a more controlled swing. We saw there are a lot of violent swings on this team. Peraza has one of the most violent swings. Look at how often he whiffs. Imagine if he was doing the 70%. I think he'd actually be putting the ball in play and might have an average over 200. But he's swinging for the fences every time he gets up there. It's like, you know, that baseball player that wants to show up everyone and, you know, organized softball where it's like all those
nine to fives
going against each other.
I want to say one thing, though, in defense to Jazz Chisholm. I really do. I think some players can get away. Joseph, I did not say we were going to lose. I said I wouldn't bet us to win. So I'll address
right
away.
I said we would lose.
Okay.
100%.
So I want to say one thing about swinging hard. Swinging hard is not a, it's not a guarantee that you're going to be streaky, that you're going to be a bad situational hitter. I'll use my literal father as an example. Mm-hmm. No one ever, and he played 22 years in the big leagues. I've never one time ever seen anyone, coach, you know, a manager, an assistant, a hitting coach, anyone, come up to him and say, hey, you're struggling this week. Will you tone down the swing? No, actually, that was the most attractive part about his baseball career, is that he was never cheated. That was actually the word choice people used throughout the year. He was never cheated. He's going to go out there and get his hacks in. He's going to hit three balls 400 feet foul. And he's probably going to get you more times than not. But man, does he swing the bat hard. That was the mentality. And it was seen as a good thing. So I want to say this. Jazz is only attacked, and when I say attacked, I mean criticized or critiqued, about swinging too hard, because his skill set isn't, he doesn't have the ability to overcome it. He has to swing at 70% to be successful. So I really don't feel like this is a marketing campaign. I don't really think this is like a broadcasting thing. Jazz Chisholm, some players can, Giancarlo Stanton, perfect example. He can swing like he's cutting down a damn tree. Why can he do that? Because he has a 10 plus year career to prove that he's just able to successfully play that way. You, on the other hand, need to pay attention to what works for you. And clearly he is. He is making that adjustment. So I want to give him that credit. Him trying to do less makes him a great player. But let's pay attention. When people call him streaky, that's probably a streaky mentality. You have a great 3 weeks. People start putting you in conversations you maybe never thought you can get into, or maybe you did, but now you're excited to be in that star territory. You're giving star output. Now all of a sudden you want to swing like the stars do. You want to swing at 100%. And now baseball, just like it always does, tends to knock you back down on your rear end. So I think Jazz, if he wants to be a reliable asset for the Yankees and he wants to stay here, make a lot of money in pinstripes, I would love to see that. Understand who you are long term. If you can do
absolutely
that, you're going to be here this whole time. So I don't agree. I think he's a great defender. He's at third base, guys. He's not a third baseman. I put him there. So
I think he is a very good third baseman. I do. And he makes an error every now and then. But, you know, I don't know why it's such a big deal sometimes for people. But, like, look at how many plays he made today. Look at how many plays he normally makes where, like, oh, yeah, that was nice, and then people move on. If Anthony Volpe made that same play, we'd still be hearing about it. But it's like when Jazz Chisholm makes it, the next thing is like, okay, well, what can we badge, you know, get on Jazz Chisholm for now? I'm not saying the whole fan base, but I am saying this is the one of the most criticized good players I've ever seen wear pinstripes, ever. I mean, he is constantly criticized. He's criticized how he walks to the base. He's criticized how he jogs the bases. He's criticized for what he wears. He's criticized for his swing. He's criticized for how hard he runs, when he slides head first, the way he slides, how he runs, like the way he plays third, how lackadaisical he is at third. I mean, there are so many things. This guy, it does not matter what he does. Half of the fan base, it feels like, criticize it.
He won't get his flowers until we win as an organization. Because you have to remember, yeah, Jazz is an easy target, but he's also an easy guy to prop up. When the Yankees win, you never see more positivity about Jazz. I promise you. When Jazz goes 4-for-5 and he's got two triples and he throws it, does a jump throw and slides in safely at third, now everyone's like, oh, I just love how he plays. But then you watch the next day, the Yankees lose 6-0, and you see Jazz hitting a weak fly ball in the infield, and they say, well, see that right there is the problem.
And he's a better player than he was in Miami, by the way. He's a completely better player.
It's not even close. So Cuso with the super, thank you for the $5. Joining us late, he was putting his kids to bed. Says, better hope they trade Spencer Jones. Not even sure what that is, but his development, the way they do Jason. Yeah, I have no idea what that means. Astrophy? Really? No, I have no clue. I'm just a podcaster. I don't know what that is.
You don't know SCT.
Bill Astrophy, his development. Yeah. No, I feel like I'm at the fifth grade spelling bee. I have no
idea. They'll decrease his development, essentially.
Yeah, I assumed they were talking about decreasing his development. I totally get that. The way they do with
this
Jason.
This is a new challenge. We appreciate you, Kuso. New challenge here.
Thank you.
If you drop a super chat, you have to use only SAT words and confuse the hell out of Gary. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I got like a 24 on my ACT, so I'm not dumb, but I'm not
24. I don't even know what that means. Is that
Bad? I mean, I think 24 is like okay. You go to Dartmouth, you need like a 30 plus. I'm not going to Dartmouth, but yeah, that's all I'm saying. So he's essentially saying, let's get rid of Spencer Jones because he doesn't trust the Yankees are going to do with a prospect what they should. This is a fair takeaway. You can't really punish anyone for this mentality because they've shown they don't really choose the right players. Like, I would argue, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Yankees have chosen incorrectly between Jason Dominguez and Anthony Volpe on what to do with said player. Anthony Volpe is the lesser of in terms of talent, right? They'll shart on his development. Okay, gotta love that. That's what we like to see.
Dude that just dropped atrophy in a super chat just said shart.
Shart, I've seen. So realistically,
that's amazing.
Anthony Volpe plays no matter what. He's clearly the worst of the two players between he and Jason Dominguez. If Jason Dominguez was playing every single day for the next 3 years and he was a career 225 hitter, right? He was regressing defensively. What would everybody be saying? Who the hell's next? Where's the next prospect? Where's Spencer Jones? Who's going to fill these shoes? That's exactly what people would be saying. And yet, they're not doing it this way. They're making Jason Dominguez be a 300 hitter in order to force his way on the field, but then Anthony Volpe can hit 220 and just play what they call good defense. So, yeah, I don't blame him for being afraid of this. Jake, what do you think about this? Because I know you're going to – I have a feeling you're going to say, well, it'll go differently. Like, the Yankees are turning the page. But I understand this fear because I have the same.
So I know, like, the analytic department, like, Brendan Lawson, I think, was the guy who ended up getting fired. Like, I think he was the hitting coach, and they didn't like it. Whatever. There are a lot of guys like that were in the minors, right? And Clint Frazier's talked about this, and I told you about the article I read about how things are different. Cam Schlittler is just a completely different type of arm than what they were going after, and that's why all of a sudden he's working out. I don't think it's a surprise that Will Warren and who was the other guy? There were two guys that had like six ERAs, and those were the best pitchers in AAA. Right? Those were like the top starting pitchers. And all of a sudden, if you look at AAA right now, you got Brendan Beck, who's had just a fantastic, fantastic minor league career, right? He's still young. You got him, you got Cam Schlittler, right? And I mean, Alan Winans was pitching well, but that's different. But you got Carlos LaGrange, I believe.
Yeah, the stats aren't everything.
No.
Some guys just find ways in the minor leagues to get out, and I shouldn't call it fool's gold, but don't make it seem like if a guy has a low ERA that it just transfers. Like, stuff's a thing.
Yeah.
Watching the games and seeing, okay, what does this fastball look like?
I just want him to get a shot, you know?
I understand where you're coming from. I personally don't. I think if a guy throws low 90s, he's not going to be a mainstay in the big leagues. He's just not. You're going to need to pitch with velocity. And today's
Chase Hampton's the other one. That's right. Yep. Chase Hampton. We won't. I don't know what happens to Chase Hampton, to be honest with you. Wouldn't rule him out, but the Tommy John surgery is going to hold him back. Selvage is the one I was thinking of. Brock Selvage. Because
this super chat, by the way, is really good. Slim Lewis is getting back to the defense. He says Jazz has a career defensive war of 0.3 in 500 games. This is all true. How many of those 500 games are out of position at his home position of second base? Probably a lot of those games. Now, mind you, this, to Slim's, I guess, to his credit, it's the way we're using him with our current roster construction. So certainly you can say, well, it doesn't matter how good he is at second if you don't use him there. But if you do bring him back, which Slim is saying I wouldn't do, he's at least back next year. At some point or another, DJ and some of these other guys have to get out of the way, and Jazz has to get back to where he's used to playing. I assume long-term, Jake, I really believe this, Jazz will be the second baseman full-time for the Yankees at some point. I just don't know how far in the future we're going to have to wait for that. And that defensive war that's brought up, I think that defensive war starts to really spike at that point.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, we kind of saw it, you know, with Savant, where they rank the run, the defensive run saved or whatever, and he was third when he was playing at second. I think he is a better second baseman. I think there's more value with him at third just because that arm throwing across the diamond and just his range. It's also why I believe he can play shortstop. So yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting for sure. The one thing that I have found really interesting is look at where guys are playing, you know, for the Yankees minor league. Have you been following that, by the way, the lineups? Because I actually follow like the Rail Riders. I follow all
the
them.
Only person I've been following, and I really wanted to figure out what the Yankees were doing with this player. And this was a question a lot of folks had. What are they doing with George Lombard Jr.? What are they doing with this kid? Are they going to push him over to third base and act like they've got a mainstay at short? Because they could easily do that, guys.
They could.
To our dismay. They can say, oh, Anthony Volpe will figure it out. He's one of our top guys. They can easily say that and buy into that. Maybe move Lombard Jr. to second base. Move him to third and say, let's leave short alone. He'll figure it out. Lombard, you fit around that. But they're not doing that. George Lombard Jr. is the shortstop. So that's interesting to me. But for the other guys, as far as what they're doing, I haven't. I know I had this conversation, though, about Dominguez and where he was playing in the outfield. But, Jake, what do you got?
So Rock Riggio has been manning second, which is interesting.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. George Lombard Jr. has played shortstop. Rafael Flores, remember that name, because if Austin Wells doesn't take that next step, Escara's 30, right? And you're not going to play Ben Rice there all the time, I don't think. So I think Flores is a guy who could end up being your long-term catcher. But then on the Scranton Wilkes-Barre side, B-Boss is playing second every day. And Spencer Jones today was in left field.
It's very interesting. Very interesting. So I guess there's so much at work here. If you really think about this, you can easily say that. So the name that popped out when you read it, when you said Rock Riggio, and I heard that name, I've seen the results. The numbers are there. He's hitting a home run every other day. But having said that, if he's at second base, you can make the argument that the Yankees can possibly have a second baseman of the future, right? And we saw this with Durbin as well. And we saw this. He was putting up big numbers.
We saw this with Durbin, all right.
We that saw it with Durbin. Hell Jack of a Curry job, comes yes, out and says, this is the future, which at the time he was not traded. He wasn't. No. He was still a member of the Yankees.
He's Altuve.
He's Altuve. Right? That's what every player is. As long as you're under 5'10 and you can hit for contact, they're like, he's Altuve. I was like, I'm pretty sure he's not. But we were rooting for him. We were excited.
Altuve. How about that?
Yeah, we were excited. Diet Coke Altuve. So we were excited. But when you see a player giving you power numbers, you see their home position and what they're practicing in the minor leagues, they're teeing up for second base. It leads you to believe, and sort of back to what Slim was saying, is he going to return to second base? Because if the Yankees do bite the apple of one of these prospects at second base and leave them at that position, probably will. Well, then you don't really have to, as long as you're getting production from a young player, you don't have to pay a ton of money on a player like Jazz. You get cheaper. And you've mentioned this plenty of times, Jake. Hal Steinbrenner said, I want this team to be, I want it to be manageable financially. We're not going to drop off a cliff in terms of payroll, but we're not going to blow past $300 million. Well, one way to do that, Paul Goldschmidt's probably going to be off this roster at the end of the year. It's a one-year deal. You look up, Cody Bellinger's going to opt in more than likely. And then you also look up and say, well, Jazz is going to be in arbitration. What happens after that? You're talking about a player who's probably going to be making anywhere from $15 to $20 million a year. Well, players like Rock Riggio and some of these guys who maybe potentially fit like gloves in our infield, much cheaper, much more controllable option. So interesting. I don't want to force them just because they're cheap. You got to play well before I want you here. So I'm rooting for them. I love watching prospects come up through the system. It's obviously rewarding, but there's nothing worse than just buying into prospects just because they're cheap for our owner.
No, that's true. And that's definitely not why we care. We care because it's, you know, you get to watch these guys grow. A few things I want to point out. So obviously Spencer Jones. I think it's very telling. Not only was he playing left field, he's in the three hole already. Dude just shows up to AAA. Nope. Best hitter. That's what they're telling us. He's the best hitter on this team. That tells me that he's probably a September call-up candidate. Then you look at Rock Riggio. He's leading off every game. Found that really intriguing. Now, his batting average isn't amazing, right? It's .259, but he's got a .368 on base percentage and 14 bombs this year, right? Then you look at George Lombard Jr. I actually have a theory with him. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. He's hit 8 home runs his entire minor league career. Mind you, he was drafted in the first round, 26th overall in 2023. What I think a lot of people don't understand is at age 20, this guy hasn't shown a lot of pop, but he was supposed to have some pop. So what I think is happening and why AA seems like he's not hitting as well, I don't think it's overwhelming to him. I think they're working on his launch angle. He has 2 home runs this month. He had 1 the whole year prior to AA coming up, struggling. Now he has 2 home runs. This is part of the development cycle that I think people just kind of overlook. And so I'm not saying that maybe I don't know if I would do this. I think I would have just left George Lombard Jr. alone because he was hitting very well. But the Yankees clearly, this is my theory, okay? So I shouldn't say clearly. But my belief is that they called down and they're like, all right, we like this kid a lot. We have plans for him even as early as next year. He could be starting for us at third, short, whatever.
Short.
Hopefully.
It should be shortstop.
Right.
There's no way. If he's as good as people say he is in terms of arm.
Well, he's already a better defender than Volpe.
Even if he was a slight regression from Anthony Volpe, you mean to tell me that George Lombard Jr. isn't a better bat enough to make up that gap? If he's not, he's not that good of a prospect long term.
No, I agree.
Let's be real. So I want to see this player develop as a shortstop. I think this is the next shortstop of the Yankees. And of course, if the Yankees can go free agent or via trade for a superstar, then by all means, go ahead and do that. And you have this player that you can now move positionally. We've done this with this organization. I wanted to throw this.
What do you think about that theory, by the way? Real quick.
What was the theory real quick? I mean, I'm just all over the place.
Yeah. So George Lombard Jr., his average went way down. He's struggling, right?
Yes, of course.
But I think he's struggling because they're moving him up the rungs, not just in AA, like from single A to AA. But okay. I think they're asking him to change his swing a little bit. I think we're seeing a little bit more of an uppercut. They're trying to work on that launch angle and add more home runs. Because I have a feeling that, you know, I almost said George Steinbrenner. I have a feeling that Brian Cashman is looking at this player as a future star on this team.
Oh, I don't think they're trying to change his swing. I just think this is part of the process of you get called up from AA to AAA. Now, you look at a player, right? You look at Spencer Jones. Mm-hmm. Spencer Jones was in AA. He was raking. His ops was over 900. It was awesome. And people are already upset. They're saying he's the next Joey Gallo. All right. Strikes out a lot. Whatever. But he moves to AAA. He's hit not 1, but 2 home runs already in his short stay in AAA. So that production is transferring for him personally. It just is. He's already made his tweaks to his swing, right? His stance changes. Everything is just sort of the way it is. He's a much older player than George Lombard Jr. So the one thing I'm going to say, I think there's a huge learning curve from one level to another. When you're talking about a really young player in the game, Spencer Jones is much older. That was a factor that we talked about with this player. So do I think that it's necessarily a swing change? I mean, potentially, but that's okay. Like George Lombard Jr., there's no rush to this.
He's got plenty of time.
This time next year, George Lombard Jr. might still be in the exact situation that he's in, but all of a sudden he's figured out what swing change. That swing you had at a certain level may not work at this other level. It may not. So that's what I think this learning curve is. It's a personal thing. Everybody has a different path. All I really care about is by the time he's of the actual ripe age to be called up, his development makes enough sense to replace what I'm watching at shortstop. Because Anthony Volpe is not a terrible baseball player. I understand everyone wants me to believe that. But he's by no means a consistent good player. And
no.
I need consistently
good. He's not a starter right now, in my opinion.
He's not a starter at all. So I want to see this work with this other player. And if his timeline and his development isn't tracking probably this time next year or even the year after that, then you start looking at other options. But man, I'm really rooting for some of these kids because you see what's going on at the big league level where we're just sort of allowing people to play. And I did see it in the comments. Someone said, well, what do you want the Yankees to do? They don't have a better option. And Jake, you've mentioned Jazz potentially sliding over there. I'll tell you right now, if Slim Lewis, if he doesn't like the defense that he's got at third, which is about an average defensive third baseman, it's slightly above, you're not going to like it at shortstop. Much harder position to play. But I wanted to take this super chat off the screen just for a second. Yeah. I wanted to bring up this chat. I think this is awesome. This is why I love our audience. I mean, they're sensational. So you look at this. So obviously, I'm not going to read all those letters. I hate it for you guys that they got rid of your names and they gave us your handles. It'll be changed. Awful. It'll be changed when a Mr. B starts complaining, and they'll change it. But user says there's no way Scott Boris is Jake's favorite agent. Let's Cody Bellinger opt in. This is very interesting. They're going to secure a big bag before the 2027 work stoppage. This is a factor. Deny it. You can deny it all you want. Everyone understands, players, agents. You've seen people that cover this game who have mentioned there's going to be a work stoppage. Ken Rosenthal actually came out and he expects there to be. Now, he's not guaranteeing it, but he thought and he suggested that there could be one. This is a factor for players who are out there on one-year contracts, and that's exactly what Cody Bellinger's on currently. However, he's just got a player option for $25 million for 2026. Mm-hmm. This is good and bad for the Yankees because one thing, what happens if Cody Bellinger does, as Jake put it, what if he does climb up to 280, 285, plays electric defense? Analytics suggest he's a great defender. He moves from center to right to left. He's been awesome in all those positions. And he's also shown that he can sit for a day. You can use him any way you want. And he's still successful. He's also got a first base glove in his locker. He's great at baseball. You can argue that Cody Bellinger, whether you think he should be paid $25 million or not, maybe it's better to take a $20 million a year contract and agree before a work stoppage for a 4 or 5 year contract. Maybe that's back with the Yankees. You never know. But this was an interesting comment. I loved it.
It's very interesting. Because, I mean, I've said that there needs to be, not a lockout, but there needs to be a new CBA. I mean, I think players should be pushing for expanded rosters. So why is it September call-ups, you expand the roster to 28? Why do you have a 40-man roster? 40 men are eligible to be on the 28 in September? That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard. So it really is stupid. I mean, I think it's stupid in most, I think NBA has it right. Like, you don't need like 30 people on a team, but like the NFL, they have 53. I hate the way the NFL does it, but baseball, I really hate the way baseball does it. Cause I think 26 is ridiculous. I mean,
football,
it's like the whole damn
first row of the bleachers is out there. There's so many players.
Yeah. But, and yet there's not enough because you think
it's
about,
it's a high injury sport as well.
Yeah.
I mean, let's
but you
be
also
real.
Think about special teams and that's a whole other thing. So it's like, You get guys that get injured on special teams that are on your
banned
offense
special
or defense.
Teams. Nobody want. I don't want to watch special teams. I've
then those
long
guys
been
will
saying,
have a job.
Then they get rid of their job. I'm sorry. Replace them with AI.
You're heartless.
I know.
Maybe that'll be the lockout because players are worried about being replaced by AI.
Right. Yeah. So you see this right here. The promised one says, and I can throw it up. I don't have to throw it up. So he says, if Cody hits 280 with 30 home runs, he's opting out. And even if he doesn't hit 30, if he hits 24 homers, hits 280, and he's taking clutch at bats in October, we expect to be there. We're not guaranteed. But you go out there and Cody Bellinger's showing I can be versatile defensively. I've got a cannon. I can
run. Let's put AI at shortstop.
Right. AI at shortstop. Thank you. Jeter's gift basket too. What a name.
Oh man.
That's awesome.
Our
just
comment
think,
section.
Derek Jeter says he didn't even do that. And people just run with it 20 years later. So
that's so funny.
Pretty insane. But Caitlin's dad with the 5, thank you for supporting our channel. We really appreciate that. And guys, make sure you guys are subscribed
appreciate
and like
you.
This video and hit the bell so you're notified. People tell me every day that we go live and they jump in 40 minutes late because they never were notified, please be sure to do that. Caitlin's dad says apparently Aaron Judge back was hurting today. I was unaware of this. Didn't know it, so thank you for bringing it to us.
Yeah, I didn't know
either. Still found a way to hit two homers. Hope Jazz is okay. Seemed to be returned back to the field. That was good news. But we'll see how this progresses tomorrow. Just got in here. See, there you have it. Not sure if you talked about it yet. So, yeah, we talked about Jazz. We've talked about the injuries. We're not going to dive into exactly how much we would pay because, I mean, that's neither here nor there. We just hate the idea of a blank check. Go out there and make sense of a market value. And being that you're the Yankees, you should be able to go a little bit above that to make sure you bring back the player. But Jazz has to prove he can stay healthy. If he can't do that, I don't bring him back. It's just that simple. If you show you can be healthy for this team, he's a good enough player to be a mainstay. He just is.
I definitely agree with that. Blank check kind of, I hate that term. So I rolled my eyes, but
then you sign a player and then they say, I knew we shouldn't have brought him back. He's overpaid. I'm like, you told us, like DJ LeMahieu, you told us to blank check him. You remember that? We were calling him a robot.
Yep.
Which is fair. I wanted him back, but we said blank check and this is what it looks like.
I like this. I don't know if you heard it the other day. I actually compared him to Curtis Granderson because Granderson was a speed, like stolen base defensive threat. And that's kind of, but then he goes to the Yankees and he hits 40 bombs. And it's like, I'm not saying Jazz Chisholm is going to hit 40 home runs. You don't want Jazz Chisholm hitting 40 home runs because that's going to, accompanying that will be like 200 batting average. So he'll turn into Adam Dunn with legs. But no, I do feel like that's kind of the best, that's the best comparison I can give because when Granderson left the Tigers, he was still a good player, but he did not have the pop that he showed on the Yankees. And I think partially his swing fit Yankee Stadium so well. And I feel like it's the same thing with Jazz.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Curtis Granderson is he started with Detroit. And mm-hmm. while he was athletic and agile, exactly what you see out of Jazz, he had a certain brand of baseball. He can hit home runs, but you see with Comerica Park, deep right center field, that's triples alley. I'm going to play to that. And that's exactly what he did. He understood. He could read the room. What do I need to do for this team? I'm going to lead off. It's crazy because my dad was on that team. I remember his walk-up song to this day. I mean, he was a fun player to watch. And you just have to understand, what does my team need? Don't try to hit 40 home runs and then just think that that immediately translates to being a great player. No, you need to hit 40 home runs with contact if you're going to be that. And if you're going to do that, you better not have speed. Because why do I want you hitting 40 home runs and hitting 210?
Exactly.
If you can change a game with your legs this way, Jazz is way too athletic. He doesn't remind me of anybody. He really doesn't. Jazz reminds me of Jazz. Be yourself. And Jake obviously isn't saying not to be yourself. I don't want to make it seem that way.
Hey, you liked my comp initially.
I loved it. No, I absolutely loved it. But obviously what Curtis Granderson was doing, Curtis Granderson, while he was athletic, was a certain brand of player. He was a more well-rounded player. When he got to the Yankees, he was much older. He was not as athletic. He wasn't going to steal 40 bags. Those days were over. Yeah, he could still run and score from first and all that, but it was a regression. So what did he do? I've got the short porch in right field. I'm going to commit to the power game. I'm not going to be this leadoff hitter, supreme speed guy. He understood how to read the room. Who?
Granderson.
Like, do I think he's underrated?
Yankees? I kind of do, looking back at
it. I mean, not really. We have so many great players in our history. I mean, he's underrated the same way Bernie Williams is underrated. It's like, obviously Bernie's a better player, but we still do. Like, if you really ask people, like, what'd you think of Granderson? People will tell you, and I don't know, you're not going to get the credit. If you wanted to hit 40 home runs with another organization, you're probably going to get clapped for a lot more because you're probably the face of it, but not New York. You're not. I think people understand.
His average season with the Yankees, real quick, would have been 36 home runs, 97 RBIs, 17 stolen bases. And I think people would have just focused on the 173 strikeouts. But 245 average, 335 on base, 495 slugging, 829 OPS. That's a really good player.
Yeah, it is. It's a good player. He's always been. He just understands how to play. He just knows. I know how to be a power hitter. It's kind of like Ichiro. He always said this. I could hit 30 home runs a year if I wanted to.
But I think Jazz could be better than that.
Better than what?
that average Curtis Granderson Yankee season. And the reason I say that is because he might not have the 36 home runs, but I would trust Jazz to hit for average more than Granderson.
Well, yeah, I do hear a lot that a player hits 40 home runs and they hit 210. And they'll tell you what his ops is, right? He walks a ton, but he does strike out a lot. A guy with 40 home runs that hits 210, I would much rather have a 280 player who hit 20. That's just my personal preference. People can disagree with that. The analytics can disagree with it. I have no problem with a different mentality on these players, but I just think a player who can hit, who has power, who's high contact, can hit with runners in scoring position. He doesn't strike out a ton with guys on third, less than two outs. He finds a way to make productive outs. The guy who hits 280 is much more likely to make a situational out than the guy who hits 40 home runs with low contact. So that's my mentality. It's always been my brand of baseball, my preference going in October. That's what I'm looking forward to with Jazz. 70% swing, do less. You've got plenty in the tank.
Yeah. So tomorrow, the Yankees are starting a four-game set in
Please
Toronto.
Tell me it's late. Please tell me it's a late game.
Why would it be an early game on a Monday? 7:07.
Thank you, God.
It is, Carlos Rodon versus Max Scherzer. I forgot Max Scherzer was in the league.
Oh, he's back?
Okay, good. I'm not the only one. Max Scherzer.
Good for him.
Is on Toronto. Us. The more you know.
Future Hall of Famer, Max Scherzer.
Good for him. It's, I'm happy for him.
I think he was dealing with a finger injury at first. Yeah. I'm not sure what he was dealing with after that. It could have been that. But we know that Max, despite this being clearly the back end, like this is New York Jets, Aaron Rodgers territory. Like,
no,
this
not
is
even.
This is the end, okay?
Yeah.
But he knows how to pitch. This is similar to Marcus Stroman today. I mean, we can say what we want about the stuff and how he pitched at the end of 2024, the beginning of this year, but he's still got Marcus Stroman's mind. Max Scherzer, future Hall of Famer, he knows how to get outs. It's just a matter of if we do enough to stop him. And the stuff, you're not going to see 100 tomorrow. You're just not. So the Yankees, if they do what they should, we should score early and often. We got to score. Did we want to throw him up on the screen and make some picks? Because I was looking forward to making picks. And by the way, before we do that.
Yes.
If you guys are listening to us, I know there's quite a few people now, and we've now started consistently getting our show with you guys, but Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts, our podcast will be there every day, probably within about 15 to 20 minutes after our live is done with. I will have them uploaded after every show. And please be sure, helps us out a lot, a ton. Make sure to drop a review. Help us climb the charts. We'd love that.
Oh, yeah, we would love that. And of course, be sure to subscribe because we are at 10,000 subscribers giving away a authentic Yankees jersey. So you could even get
any
the
Yankee
mark.
Jersey of your choice. Road, any number you want. We'll make it happen. We will. 10,000. We'll give it away live on a show. Of course, we hope it's a mainstay, like someone who's a member, so that people know we're giving it to a real person.
Exactly. All right, cool. So, yeah, tomorrow, we don't have anything available on ProfitX right now. Obviously, that'll take some time. But Scherzer's a right-hander. I'm not really going to care too much about the history against Max Scherzer for these players because I just think at this point, late in his career, he's not pitching the same as he used to. So I'm actually going to take... I'm going to keep the Jazz train rolling. I mean, we just keep hitting the Jazz total bases. So I'm going to go
Jazz.
Getting
rich over here.
Yeah, right? I'm just going to go Jazz Chisholm. And I'm going to take whatever the over is on Carlos Rodon's strikeouts. And I'm going to take the Yankees money line. And that is what I'm going to do.
Okay, perfect. So I think we're, again, going to see Jason Dominguez start tomorrow. I do. I think Dominguez starts tomorrow. I think Cody Bellinger sits. He's got really poor numbers against Max Scherzer. He's hitting 071 in 14 career at-bats. Now, mind you,
so
it's not like that's
that.
A career worth of work, but it's no slugging. It is 071. It is. So we don't have a ton of great numbers. Paul Goldschmidt is hitting 175 and actually quite a few at-bats, 40 at-bats. Trent Grisham, also poor numbers against Scherzer. So some tough decisions for the Yankees to make. Stanton's got good numbers. So, yeah, I'm going to assume no Bellinger tomorrow. I'm going to go with Jason Dominguez. Jason Dominguez has no experience against Scherzer, but Scherzer has no experience against him either. So I think that this is one of those moments where, yeah, you may have been great in the past, but I'm only seeing you for what you are now. I think Jason Dominguez leaves the yard. I know we've talked about those power numbers. I'm going to go over 1.5 total bases, J-Dom.
I like it. So that is what we got for you guys. Be sure to use ProfitX code YanksU when you sign up. It helps us out. It helps them out. They're great sponsors of the show. So that's what we got for you guys. Comment section, comment section, comment section. Okay, how about this? You are the general manager of the New York Yankees, and you get to decide to call up one minor leaguer to help after the trade deadline. Okay, who is it? Drop in the comment section below. That's
Spencer
all I got.
Jones. It's Spencer Jones for me. I'm trading Trent Grisham. Has nothing to do with him personally. Get that logjam out of here. Get Cody Bellinger in the lineup every single day. Jason Dominguez, that 22-year-old top prospect that you like to call him, get him in the lineup every single day. Do that, Boone. Obviously, Cashman's got to make it happen first. But you bring up a Spencer Jones. He's still got to perform in AAA. He's off to a great start. He's got two homers already. Very exciting. Make sure you guys subscribe. Hit that bell so you're notified. And of course, like this video.